Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 5:09 here, 77 degrees on this Wednesday, August 6, 2025. You can catch us at 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can also catch us anywhere you get your favorite podcast. Just search The Rob O'Donnell Show. And if you missed the interview earlier today at the 4 o'clock hour with Congressman Rob Bresnahan and GOP House Chairwoman Congresswoman Lisa McClain of Michigan's 9th District, she is the fourth highest ranking member of the House of Representatives. There is the Speaker of the House, there is the Majority Leader, there is the Majority Whip, and then there is the Chairwoman, which is Congresswoman Lisa McClain. And she was in our area touring a couple of manufacturing plants with the congressman. She was going to be down in Pennsylvania's 7th District, I believe, tomorrow. And she was in New Jersey yesterday with a couple of representatives from that area touring the same thing to talk about how the boom in manufacturing, helped by the Big Beautiful Bill, is moving forward. So it was great to have them in the studio here in Northeast Pennsylvania. And we got some really good news about our hospitals here in our area, that there is a letter of intent from an organization. Now, what that looks like moving forward, but it is great progress. And the chairwoman said that is by no small order from the work of our Congressman Rob Bresnahan and what he's done to fight for our rural hospitals here in our area. So as we move on with the show here, this story was interesting. The Teamsters boss and Sean O'Brien was on a podcast, and he accused then-Vice President Kamala Harris of pressuring his union for an endorsement. And this interview took place, this podcast where he was interviewed took place on Tuesday. And he recounted a tense meeting in which she allegedly said that the union better get on board. And if this doesn't show entitlement, if this doesn't show who you are as a person, you know, your insecurities and basically not letting your work speak for itself, I don't know what does. And listen, he has been controversial on both sides, Sean O'Brien. He has fought with Republicans. He has fought with Democrats. What he does fight for is his union membership, and that's what his job is. That's what he's supposed to do. But it's interesting now that this stuff is all starting to come out, and it's really no surprise for anyone who saw Kamala Harris for what she was, that she figured that the Teamsters' endorsement and their Democrat history, it was just expected. And in fact, it was not expected. She needed to work for it. And she didn't like the fact that she needed to work for it, as per the Teamsters president, Sean O'Brien. He described one putting off encounter that they had in 2024 with the presidential candidate in a photo op line. So Joan goes up in a line and Joan says, "I'm Joan Corey. I'm the vice president of the Teamsters Union." And Harris pointed her finger at her face and said, "Teamsters better get on board." And so Joan said, "Excuse me?" And this is the vice president of the Teamsters. And Harris replied, "Yeah, Teamsters better get on board. I don't know why you haven't endorsed me yet." So the vice president came back and told the president this. And between them, the board, they said the nerve of her. O'Brien, who has criticized the Democrat Party in the past and fought with the Republican Party, went on to claim that when Harris met with the union's executive board, which had prepared a slate of 16 questions, she only answered 4 questions. She really didn't answer the questions at all. And then on the 4th question, my chief of staff slides me an index card that says, "This is the last question. She's not answering anymore," because she wanted to pontificate and give her a speech on why the country is the way it is and why we should endorse her, not answer our questions. Now, this brings to light a few things. A, I'm glad that they are doing their due diligence as a union behind the scenes. The fact that they prepared 16 questions for her and she refused to really answer them in any sort of substance, and that was not okay for them. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. And this goes for anyone. the fact that she expected their support, not work for their support, not tell them why she should be a good choice for them to endorse. She just expected it. It was just, I'm the one. O'Brien paraphrased her closing as essentially telling the union leadership, listen, I'm going to win with or without you. And it was like such a smug answer. And this is a quote from him. And it was like such a smug answer, like, okay. And that turned the majority of the people in that room off her, he said. O'Brien then described her postmortem of the meeting, noting that many of the union leadership were turned off by Harris's smug demeanor and body language. You could feel it a mile away, he said. The Teamsters declined to endorse a candidate in the 2024 presidential election, a move that sparked internal and external criticism. Once we announced that there was going to be no endorsement, that's when all the Keyboy warriors came out and attacks from the DSA, the Democrat Social Association, and, you know, my friends that were alleging, my friends that were, you know, high-ranking senators in the Democrat Party. Once I spoke at the RNC, then I was like, no good to them. Harris and her team did not immediately respond to a request for comment based off the Teamsters leader's statement. Now, there were Teamsters sectors that voted to endorse Trump, voted to support Trump, but the Teamsters as a whole chose to sit it out, mainly because of the smug attitude of Kamala Harris. And it's probably her campaign in a nutshell. It's probably the entire reason why she's really not been liked. And if you look back at her political career, especially running for president, dropping out of the primary first because of lack of support, and even now, today, where you have someone like an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is polling higher than who was the vice president of the United States and a candidate for president, who, yes, was beat pretty badly, lost every battleground state, but again, expected to win, or her circle was telling her time and time again that she was going to win. I think she really believed she was going to win. I think anyone looking at the polling honestly saw there were major cracks and that there was trouble to be had. I think the election night, that night, showed that, you know, point blank. But it's interesting that you have people like the president of the Teamsters Union coming out now and making statements like this. Is this basically taking her out of any future races before it even starts? Are they saying, hey, don't even think about running again because we have more stories like this? I think it is exactly that. I think she has seen the writing on the wall. It's why she's not running for governor. I think she sees the writing on the wall. It's why she's made statements saying politics isn't her thing right now, isn't in her plan. And that most likely includes the next presidential election. It's not like she does not have years ahead of her, but I think her likability has been shown time and time again to not pass any threshold whatsoever. But we'll see. When you have a Democrat Party that is lacking leadership, lacking message, lacking a cohesive platform, you know, they do sometimes start to listen to the wackiest bunch. And that's why you have a Jasmine Crockett. That's why you have someone like an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez kind of laying low. She's not dumb when it comes to politics. She may not be able to talk policy very well. She might not be able to defend anything that she tries to defend as far as stances that she has or why she has them. She has the cliches of tax the rich and your Republicans are bad and the Nazis are out there and everything like that. But she's not crazy like a Jasmine Crockett. She's not crazy like a babbling Bernie Sanders. She'll latch on to him. But again, here's someone that just could not have national recognition. But I would not discount that either, because obviously the Democrats, when Hillary Clinton ran, were afraid of Bernie Sanders. This is why they pushed him out. So it'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward. It'll be interesting to see where things go from here. But you've already had the Biden camp basically warn the Harris, Kamala Harris team, that, listen, you better sit this one out as far as throwing stones at us, because we'll just come out swinging. You saw a little bit of that with the Hunter Biden recent interview, to where he totally, you know, blaming what, Ambien on his dad? So it's going to be interesting as it moves forward. I'm seeing now the White House live press conference where you have Tim Cook from Apple, where they're increasing their investment to $100 billion. Another $100 billion in Apple investment in United States manufacturing. And he's saying it just be a matter of time before an iPhone is made here in America. That's probably a stretch, but $100 billion additional investment. Tim Cook is in the White House right now at this press conference that I'm looking at, where they're announcing this additional $100 billion with the Treasury Secretary there, and Scott Bessent is there as this announcement's being made. And $100 billion investment from Apple is no small thing. So I think everyone needs to pay attention. And this is in addition to a few hundred billion that Apple has already committed to investing in U.S. manufacturing. So good things happening if you open yourself up. You don't have to like the guy. I get it. You don't have to at all. But if they're doing good things, at least accept it. And then say, oh, okay, well, we can grow on that. We could do something better than that. But until you have those ideas and those people that can see that through, I guess we'll just have to be at odds. Apple to invest $600 billion over the next 4 years in total. So this is an additional $100 billion. I knew there were a few hundred billion already earmarked. $600 billion over the next 4 years. That's an incredible investment. Incredible investment. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. We're getting more information from that New York City shooter, Shane Tamora. Remember him? He's the one who was apparently targeting the NFL at that shooting that took the life of four individuals, including a New York City police officer working a paid detailed unit. It turns out that there is a documented history of mental health issues from that his mother is accusing. The frantic mom of mass shooter Shane Tamora had repeatedly called 911 on her mentally ill son in the years before he shot up a Manhattan skyscraper, once telling cops he was threatening to kill himself and that he suffered from a sports-related concussion. Newly released audio of these 911 calls show. The 911 audio was among a trove of material released by police in Tamora's hometown of Las Vegas this week, as the NYPD continues to probe the last week's bloodshed that killed four innocent people when he stormed into the towering Manhattan office building. Now, the 27-year-old claims he had CTE and accused the NFL, which has offices at the building, of covering up the dangers of brain injuries, an apparent suicide note that was found, stashed in his wallet. Three years earlier, Tamora's mom had made similar claims when she called cops on him, according to audio. On September 12th, 2022, Tamora's mother hurriedly called emergency dispatchers to warn them that her son kept a gun in his backpack and was threatening to kill himself. There were multiple opportunities to ensure this individual didn't have firearms or didn't have access to firearms, and they continued to fail. The mother said during the audio recording, he's going to kill himself, she said in the recording. He didn't say he made a plan. He just said that he can't take it anymore. Tamora's mother had placed the call from a stairwell outside of a budget suites motel because she didn't want him to know that she was calling the police. He just started crying and slamming things and said, I'm making him worse. So I said, I'll step outside, she said. I don't want you to be upset. but I'm afraid to leave. And she called 911. She also warned them that her son was under doctor's care for depression, concussion-like sports injuries, chronic migraines, and insomnia. The incident was one of two that led to Tamora being admitted to hospitals for mental health crisis. In 2024, he was committed to a hospital again after calling his mother and telling her he wanted to hurt himself. Police body cam footage from the incident documents this. He was just crying and said, "I'm not going to be able to go any further," his mother told 911 dispatcher. Again, she noted that he struggled with mental health issues, including bipolar disorder, anxiety, and depression. When cops responded to his home, body camera footage captured medics wheeling him away for his treatment. Las Vegas cops said the records, which would normally be withheld due to privacy protections, were being released in light of extraordinary circumstances. After driving from Las Vegas, he rushed to the Midtown office building armed with a rifle last Monday evening after rush hour. But yet you had multiple people run about gun laws. We need additional. You need to do more. How about enforce the ones we have? If you're not enforcing any laws, additional ones aren't going to do anything. So obviously it's learned that the system isn't working, that the current laws aren't being upheld, aren't being enforced, because there were multiple avenues here that could have intervened before this tragedy. And it didn't need an additional law. It didn't need pointing fingers at one another or blaming an inanimate object. It just took the fortitude to follow the laws that are already existing. And obviously, someone didn't, and it fell through the cracks. And that's what needs to be fixed. That's what needs to be changed. It's 5:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 5:35, 77 degrees on this Wednesday, August 6, 2025. It's almost over the weekend, week here, right? Hump day. That's what we call this. We're on the downside. See, we made it this far. We'll get through the rest of the week together. So worst part is past us, and it's all downhill. Hit the slope, right? We started off the show today, and there is a little more information coming out of that shooting that was at Fort Stewart in Georgia, where five military personnel were shot and wounded. Thankfully, none are in critical condition. None are have life-threatening wounds at this time. They were rushed to Savannah Hospital, has an excellent level one trauma center. And they were escorted by state police by ambulance after initially being treated on site at Fort Stewart in Georgia, which is about 40 minutes southwest of Georgia, to try and put it in perspective. If you've ever been to Bass Pro Shops outside of Savannah, Georgia, it's on the way there. So pass it all the time when I've been down there. And it turns out that at this point, it has been confirmed now that the assailant in this is an Army sergeant himself. Now, what caused this? There is a picture out already, and he has been identified, but he is an Army sergeant. So there's a lot of things that need to be looked at here. Obviously, he had the authority to be on the base. Obviously, active duty personnel or those with military active IDs are not commonly subject to vehicle checks or personal checks like other people are. If you have access cards to get on bases, you're commonly not checked. If you are just a visitor that's going for, you know, an issue and you're not on any list to be there and such, a lot of times they will pull your car over and they will do a cursory search on military bases, some more than others. But here is an individual that belonged there had the identification to be there, would not have his vehicle checked. Something happened to where, and I don't know what type of weapon was used at this time, at this point, to open fire on his fellow soldiers. And again, five being wounded and injured. Thankfully, we're not reporting any deaths at this time and no life-threatening injuries. So that's the latest from Fort Stewart, Georgia, to where the assailant is. And it needs to be looked at why this happened. What was the incident that sparked this? Was it random? Was it just anyone who was around? What was the cause here? Because without those answers, you know, we really can't move further on how to combat something like this, especially for an individual who has every right and authority to be there. So it makes it a difficult. It makes it difficult moving forward to prevent or set up walls and barriers to make sure it doesn't happen. Back closer to home here, and I just wanted to update you on the Fort Stewart because I did see confirmation that it was, in fact, an Army sergeant that was the suspect in the case. A little closer to home here, and I see it, our former senator, Bob Casey, is joining the University of Scranton as a Lehigh Distinguished Fellow. He will mentor and guide students interested in pursuing public service. It's almost like the University of Scranton has their very own lobbyist now, doesn't it? Scranton native, son of the late Governor Robert P. Casey, comes to the University of Scranton on the heels of 28 years in state and federal elected office, including 2 terms as state auditor general, a stint as a state treasurer, 3-term tenure as a U.S. Senate, where he championed legislation aimed at improving the lives of families, children, the elderly, individuals living with disabilities, and others. So much so, he was defeated. The younger Casey left office. I like that. The younger Casey left office in January following his narrow November defeat by Republican Dave McCormick. Well, he didn't really leave office. He was kicked out of office by the voters. Yes, he did. So he'll now be a fellow at the University of Scranton. He will work with students on a wide range of views and future ambitions with the new role, not simply pursuing elective office or political careers, but as a mentor. So it was interesting. I mean, I guess who didn't see this coming in somewhat? You'd think after all that time in public office, you'd want to, I don't know, sit near a beach or near a lake and kick your feet up, have a late coffee in the morning and maybe an early cocktail in the evening. That's would be my endeavors. But I don't know. Now, it doesn't say what the pay will be or what compensation there will be. But listen, it's a private entity. He's a private citizen now, so so be it. It's 5:41 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I don't know what's going to come out of this, but the fact that there is this face-to-face meeting is a good thing. Trump envoy Steve Witkoff met with Vladimir Putin in person ahead of Russia-Ukraine peace deadline. Russian President Vladimir Putin held talks with U.S. President Donald Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff in Moscow on Wednesday, the Kremlin said. Days before the White House's deadline for Russia to reach a peace deal with Ukraine or potentially face severe economic penalties that could also hit countries buying its oil. We've already heard how this may expand to places like India that buys Russian oil, one of our trading partners that has complications when it comes to China, because India is our manufacturing threat to China. and comes in only after China as far as a manufacturing avenue. The Kremlin did not immediately provide more details of the meeting. Earlier, Witkoff took an early morning stroll through a local park, a stone's throw from the Kremlin, with Kirill Dmitriev, the Russian president's envoy for investment and economic cooperation. Footage aired on local Russia TV showed. Dmitriev played a key role in three rounds of direct talks between delegations from Russia and Ukraine in Istanbul in recent months, as well as discussions between Russia and U.S. officials. The negotiations have made no progress on ending the three-year war following Russia's invasion of its neighbor Ukraine. Trump's deadline for Putin ends this Friday. Washington has threatened severe tariffs and other economic penalties if the killing does not stop. Trump has expressed increasing frustration with Putin or Russia's escalating strikes on civilian areas of Ukraine, intended to erode moral and public appetite for a war. The intensified attacks have occurred even as Trump's urged Russia's leader in recent months to relent. And again, the importance of face-to-face meetings with someone like a Steve Witkoff and a Vladimir Putin and his underlings is an important positive, regardless of how you look at this. Now, it does not prove that there will be a positive ending to this. It does not prove that this is, it does not prove anything. But the fact that face-to-face meetings are taking place to where they look at each other and understand each other, and it's just not rhetoric over a phone, over emails, or over public statements, is a good thing. This is how diplomacy is made, in person, face-to-face, making sure you understand one another. Overnight, just on Tuesday into Wednesday, Russia forces hit a recreational center in Ukraine's southern region, killing two people and injuring 12, including two children, as per the regional governor. Russian forces launched at least four strikes on the area, but initially attacked with powerful glide bombs. There is zero military sense in this strike, only cruelty to intimidate, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky said on a post to Telegram media outlets. Western analysts and Ukraine officials say Putin is stalling for time to avoid serious negotiations while Russia forces push to capture more Ukraine land. A Russian offensive that started in the spring and is expected to continue through the fall is advancing faster than last year's push, but it's making only slow and costly gains that has been unable to take any major cities. Situation on the front line is critical for Ukraine forces, but defenses are now not about to collapse. On Tuesday, Trump said, "We'll see what happens," regarding his threat to slap tariffs on the nations that buy Russian oil, which could increase import taxes dramatically on China and India. "We have a meeting with Russia tomorrow," Trump said. "We're going to see what happens. We'll make a determination at that time." The president said that he is not publicly committed to specific tariff rate. Stepping up diplomatic economic pressure on the Kremlin risks stoking international tensions amid worsening Russia-U.S. relations. The Washington-based Center for European Policy and Analysis warned that an assessment is weak, that there are clear signs that the Kremlin is preparing for a broader confrontation with NATO, including a military buildup along Russia's western flank with alliance countries in recent years. Putin has given no hint that he might be ready to make concessions. Instead, the Russian leader and senior Kremlin officials have talked up the country's military strength, something that is just not reality. They have proven themselves to really not be an adversary that much of anybody should be worried about, minus the fact of a full-out war. Putin announced last week that Russia's new hypersonic missile, which he says cannot be intercepted by current NATO air defense systems, has entered service, but yet there's no proof of that. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, meantime, warned that Ukraine war could bring Russia and the U.S. into armed conflict. Trump responded to this by ordering the repositioning of two U.S. nuclear submarines. Kremlin spokesperson on Monday welcomed Witkoff's visit. We consider talks with Witkoff important, substantive, and very useful, the Kremlin had said. Trump initially gave Moscow a 50-day deadline, but later moved its ultimatum to the Kremlin by the end of the week. However, Trump himself doubted the effectiveness, saying Sunday that Russia has proven to be pretty good at avoiding sanctions. They're wily characters, he said of Russians. The Kremlin has insisted that international sanctions imposed since February 2022 invasion of its neighbor have had limited impact. Ukraine maintains that sanctions are taking their toll on Moscow's war machine and wants Western allies to ramp them up. And if you look or take a deep look into the Russian economy, it is taking a deep effect. And the Russian people are getting tired of endless wars, just like we did. And not wars that they're actually advancing in. It seems to be an ongoing stalemate that is costing human lives on both sides. But the fact, again, getting back to the basis of this, that Steve Witkoff is there and they are meeting in person and that the Kremlin is acknowledging that these meetings are a good thing, is a good thing. Only time will tell. Hopefully, they can come to some sort of agreement. But I don't think Russia can handle more economic drought than this war effort that it's on its own has initiated has brought upon themselves. They are not the world power, at least in a conventional sense, that they were thought to be. And if anything out of this, past the loss of life, past their aggression towards a neighboring nation, if anything came out of this, it's the fact that they are not the conventional army that was once thought or once was. So we'll see. And any peace talks are good peace talks. And the fact that Steve Witkoff does have a successful history on some of the things that he's undertaken. And the fact, again, that he is being well received by Russia are positives. But again, we've seen positives from Russia before and they throw it out the window. And that's what happens when you're dealing with a communist nation. So I guess only time will tell and we'll see. But they really can't take much more. And we have plenty more sanctions that we can add on top of it. If that goes to another level, I think that's an empty threat. I don't think they want anything to do with upping their aggression with someone like us at the same time where they have had trouble handling Ukraine. It's 5:56 here at WILK. We'll be back to close out the show in just a minute. Well, that's it for the Rob O'Donnell Show today on WILK News Radio. If you missed us at the 4 o'clock hour, we had Congressman Rob Bresnahan, Pennsylvania 8th Congressional District, here in the studio along with GOP House Chairwoman, Congresswoman Lisa McClain of Michigan's 9th. She is the fourth highest ranking member in the House of Representatives. They were in the studio today. That is up on our social media already. Jake does a great job of getting that up for you. So it is up already. So if you missed it, you can hear it. Just check out either WILK social media, my social media, X, all the places, all the fun places the kids hang out. We got it up there. So check it out. It was a longer interview than we normally do, but you know, you get someone from the national leadership of the House in here. You're going to ask a lot of questions and you want to hear what they have to say. So check it out there. Let us know how you feel. Of course, the trolls are out already, but that's expected here because you know what? They got no life. They got no hobby. They got no time to do anything else. So we expect it. That being said, we will be here tomorrow. I will be taking Friday off. I am headed up out of town to a friend's house to enjoy a weekend with the missus and my friend and his wife. So we will see you tomorrow. We will talk about whatever's happening then. Hopefully we have some more information on the Fort Stewart, Georgia shooting that took place. Thankfully, no fatalities. God bless. Be safe. We will see you tomorrow.